Mother, man.
Whitey here. When I pull up and gun down some opposition in my car, I listen to Murder Metal Mayhem.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal
Mayhem! All right, awful nice of Whitey to do that
Hell
for
yeah,
us.
Hell yeah, thanks, Whitey.
Yeah, thanks, brother. All right, well, hey, it's Tuesday, and we're doing that thing, but no, wait, it's Wednesday. It's we're doing this on Wednesday.
A little different.
It does feel weird doing it on a Wednesday.
I was sitting there last night like, something's off about that. Like, oh, yeah, it's fucking Tuesday. I should be
It's so weird. We've been doing it on Tuesday every week, but this week we had a schedule conflict and had to move it a day. But we're here at Horns High Studios for the Horns High Podcast Network doing episode 146. Getting closer, Chris, to 150, man.
Four more, baby.
Getting close. I got Joey and Chris here with me. Everybody doing okay?
Yeah, not doing too bad.
All this pandemic kind of world out there. Joey, you doing
scary.
All right?
Scary. It's scary stuff, man.
Well, yeah, I'm doing well. I'm over here taking pictures because we got a new piece in the studio, so I'm getting excited about it.
Yeah, that new Richard Ramirez mask, Chris, from Sick Rick, looking right at you, man.
It's pretty badass.
Pretty like fucking brutal. Badass. And we've got it next to our zombie Ed Gein mask, which is crazy. And then, of course, the sepia H.H. Holmes mask. And then on the other wall, Chris, we got some good ones over there, too.
The black and white gray man, Albert Fish.
Right, with the blue eyes, which is fucked up.
Pogo the Clown and fucking goddamn Ted Bundy, man.
Nice. Yeah. And then, of course, the original mask.
Yeah. Fucking Dominus.
Yeah, the fucking Venom black
sick,
metal
check
mask.
Check out Sick Rick mask, man.
Yeah, Sick Rick masks. They're all from Sick Rick, Rick Fisher. And so we're loving our brand new Richard Ramirez one. He's got a cool zombie version of that
I
is
saw that. Was
fucking
badass.
Amazing. I almost got that one. I really almost did because it's so fucking cool.
It looks dope,
I'm glad we got the one we got with the fucking pentagram on the forehead.
I mean, we have to.
And it's got the blood spatter that we wanted.
I mean, that's like bookends on that
wall. That's true.
The pentagram bookends.
That's true.
You got Ramirez with the pentagram,
with the black metal,
with the pentagram. Yeah.
So we've got some new stuff here in the studio. We're all going a little gaga with the pictures today. T-shirts, Chris, what do you got on over there, buddy? You got your Cubs hat on.
Yeah, I got my Cubs hat on. I got my old-ass fucking Hank 3 shirt on that I got at a Hank 3 show. But
cool.
Fucking Hank 3,
I think
baby.
That was a Mayhem story back in the early
Probably.
Days, wasn't it?
Probably.
I seem to remember that it was. And then, Joey, I love the Al Capone shirt, but what you got?
Yeah, the Gutter Christ Al Capone. I wore this when we did a Capone Patreon. Go listen to that. And I wore this also whenever we went up to Shaker's Bar.
Oh, yeah.
But this was done by my guy Gutter Christ out in New Jersey.
Nice.
Go check out Gutter Christ Productions. He's got tons of badass fucking merch. So.
Fuck yeah, dude. And I've got my Crypt Keeper, the Creepshow shirt from our buddies at Fright Rags. We did that interview way back when with Ben. Remember
fucking
that one, Chris?
Yes, I do.
A really cool guy and awesome t-shirts, the best horror t-shirts I've ever seen at Fright Rags. So loving that shit. Now, last week, guys, we did a good one. We went back to 1959, the Clutter Murders.
Brutal.
Family of four completely wiped out. Western Kansas, not the place you'd expect it, which is what kind of gives it that aura. And I thought we did a thorough job. We really covered it well. Of course, the book In Cold Blood by Truman Capote is like an iconic true crime book, a true crime novel.
Yeah, like the first true crime, technically, I guess.
Crime novel, so. And you think of all the ones that have come since, you know, Harold Schechter. I mean, there's been a bunch of them that are great, but you really got to give it up to Truman Capote for really being the pioneer of it. But that quadruple murder of an innocent family is just absolutely nuts. And the hunt, you know, back in an era, Chris, when they didn't have, you know, surveillance cameras and stuff
GPS,
like that.
All that shit.
It was like old school, like footprints and shit like that. They were able to figure stuff out. and pretty impressive. And then, of course, a little jailhouse snitch, Joey, always helps.
Yeah.
And gave him some names. Right, right. He really was key in that whole thing. Yeah. So if you missed it, it's a good one. We had CK talking about the band Mastodon. We did a new Killer Cage match. Joey, you had a good Mayhem story.
Yep.
A little karaoke destruction and just the usual silliness, Chris.
All the fun.
And we did just pass a 1,200 listens to that one. I was impressed. That one's done very well.
Thanks,
so,
guys. Y'all are shit.
The Clutter Murders, I didn't know how that would do with the listeners, and apparently they like it. So episode 145, guys, if you missed it. Now, tonight, we've got a good one, Chris. We love doing some gangster. Joey's got his Capone shirt on.
Yeah, yeah.
We've done them before. We've done some mobsters gangsters, but we got one nasty motherfucker
fucking
up tonight.
Whitey Bulger, man. Dude,
yeah.
Brutal as fuck.
Very. And did the shit himself. Like, there were people that killed for him, but he was, like, hands-on, like, choking people out and gnarly. I mean, just
and he got
very
away
tough.
For a long time. He eluded the cops
he
for
did.
A long time.
He did. He did. So the story is just absolutely nuts. South Boston is where he's from. The criminal career, starting at age 14, went on for a long time. And like you said, Chris, he was on the run until 2011. And it's a wild story. A lot of crime, a lot of murder, a lot of mayhem all rolled up into
all
one. And he was, you know, some
and I'm
say
sure
an
he
FB-
beat some motherfuckers with metal.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I would guarantee that.
There's metal in his death, so we'll talk about it then.
That's true. That's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
Now, the whole was he, wasn't he, an FBI informant is kind of an interesting discussion, but really, I don't see any. There's so much irrefutable proof that he really was that he claimed he wasn't. So, you know, we'll talk about that. So it'll be good. We haven't done a gangster in a bit, and we like doing that stuff. Now we got CK warming up, ready to throw down in the metal segment. He's fired up as always, talking about a band. I have no fucking idea who they even are. I did listen to them just to hear what they were. Red Fang. I don't know anything about it. But as we all know, guys, he is the great metal motherfucker. And CK knows what's up. So he's going to educate us. He's been running up and down Wild Man all day, growling at cars that drive by
the old guttural
frothing at the mouth. I got to imagine it's a frightening sight with CK getting fired up like that. And so there's been recent deaths in the metal community, another one in the rock and roll rock community with Dusty Hill. So we're going to talk about that, but some good news, Joey, about the drummer for Exodus, Tom Hunting, with his cancer fight. So we're going to talk about all that stuff in the metal segment. Got a great Killer Cage match tonight, kind of an interesting one.
It's
but
kind of very interesting.
Chris, we got a few listeners we want to say thank you to.
Yeah, we do. We got Elizabeth Washington. How's it going out in Arkansas, Beth? Hell yeah. We got Tommy Davis, and we got Samantha Cram. Thank you all for the freaking numbers. Love you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. They give us random numbers, and that's how we determine our matchup. And tonight, Joey, we've got a crazy one.
Yeah, but
in the cage.
Real quick before I say who's in the cage.
Yeah.
Speaking of our listeners, I just want to bring up, I've been noticing, did you notice that fucking Terrifier liked the post?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, the episode, and you linked them, you know
I
what I'm saying?
Them, yeah.
Yeah, they liked that. I was like, fuck yeah.
Hell yeah.
But something I was going to bring up is that, you know, as I check out these notifications from our Murder Metal Man page, that there's somebody apparently who's trying to flex on Shawback over here.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to tell us what's up. You got to let us know. And this guy's name, and you might have seen it too, is Chris Two Sheds Cheney.
Instead of one shed.
I'm like, oh, you got two sheds, so you're fucking balling over there.
Oh, wow.
So whoever this listener is, which is awesome that he's liking our shit, thank you for being a listener. I'm just
hoping.
Hell
yeah.
But man, let us know how you're two sheds. We got to know how this is.
Wow. Is that a different nation, Chris?
Like, it might be. Check shit. It out right here. That's fucking hilarious, man. What's up, dude?
Oh, that's hilarious. That's great. Yeah, that's
I forgot
awesome.
You told me about
listeners
that.
Are the best, and we appreciate all you guys. But Joey, what's the matchup tonight, dude?
All right, so tonight in the Killer Cage match, we're gonna have fucking Henry Lee Lucas our with boy. His fucking water and eye.
Right.
And he's going to be three fighting. Teeth. Yeah, he's going to be fighting the child killer, Andrea Yates.
Oh, damn. Because Henry's a little dude, and Andrea, she drowned all her kids in a bathtub.
And Henry don't care about beating up a bitch, so.
No. So that should be interesting. And they're going to have a couple of objects, Chris, and a variable to make it interesting. So they that'll be in our mayhem segment. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks to everybody out there listening. We appreciate it. Numbers are always, you know, awesome to see. 2,900 this week. So just under 3,000, but we appreciate it. That's awesome. And so thanks to everybody that
thank you guys
supports what we're doing. All right, Chris and Joe, we got a lot on our plate. Going to go east to Boston to Pac de Ca and try to track down one sadistic motherfucker on the south side.
Hell yeah, let's get our gangster on.
Forget about it.
Forget about it.
Fuck yeah, man. Some new Iron Maiden writing on the wall. Really different. Very cool harmonies there. Apparently, the guy that likes to throw his guitar in the air doesn't do that in the studio, so that's cool. I hear three harmonies there, so that's good. But lots of metalheads are stoked, including me and CK, I know, about that new one coming out September 3rd, new Iron Maiden. So fuck yeah. Imagine... they have been fucking doing this shit for fucking ever. Forever. That was the first metal show I ever saw in 1983 when they did Peace of Mind and they were touring for Peace of Mind. That was the first metal show I ever went to, and I was completely blown the fuck away hooked ever since. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about one of the most vicious organized crime bosses the U.S. has ever seen. James Whitey Bulger terrorized South Boston for many years, spent plenty of time in prison, including, guys, the famous Alcatraz, which we just covered.
Yes,
so we talked a little bit about him, but he was there, which is nuts. Also,
shit happened to him when he was in prison, too.
Yeah, and I definitely want to talk about that. And he was an FBI informant, which he, of course, would deny. And his involvement with a childhood friend and FBI agent John Connolly would cause a lot of problems, and including to Connolly himself. So this is a really interesting story. And Whitey, as Chris pointed out, was on the run for 16 years until he's eventually captured. And so we're going to dig into this one tonight, like always we do, and talk about it from a lot of angles, because I know we all watched and listened to different things. Now, Chris, we've done some good gangsters before, but a lot of people know who Whitey Bulger is from that movie Black Mass with Johnny Depp. Did you guys get a chance to watch that?
I didn't watch it. Oh, okay. I haven't seen it. I know Cashman's seen it.
But yeah, Joey, you've seen it, but I didn't know if you had seen it too, Chris. But Joey, what did you think about it?
Oh, I like it. I think it's a good movie.
And Michael says it's fucking badass. Yeah.
It's very close to, as far as I could tell from the research I've done, it's extremely close to the real thing.
I was going
to
say, they probably, as far
I'm
as
I'm sure
like,
some things aren't right, but it's awfully close.
As
it
far as mobster movies go, I feel like they touched it closer to the real story than almost any
Johnny
other
one. Depp was amazing. I don't like him personally, but man, as an actor, that motherfucker kills it,
right?
And he really did a good job with that. So but what is it, guys, you think about gangsters, Chris, like Capone and Machine Gun Kelly, Whitey Bulger? But what do you think, guys? How does that ring with the true crime fans? A lot of them dig the gangsters too,
just because of the crime. That's it is all their whole entire life is true crime, basically.
True.
They're so like, got to check out what they did, what they went through. I mean, if you're just looking at serial killers, you're still going back, but these people, everything they did was a crime. So you got a lot.
That's
of stuff
true,
to look
man.
At.
The entire lifestyle, you know, like, wow. Yeah. That's a good point. Joey, you agree with that?
Oh yeah, for sure. I also think, you got guys like this or like a Billy the Kid or something like that. And, the fact that these people seem to be able to kill without remorse,
right?
A lot without remorse,
right?
Is always people are always going to be intrigued by that, by anybody that's like that, and the fact that it's these tough. Guys were
what
like
makes them work basically,
yeah, and the fact that these guys were like in the public eye, like
constantly,
yeah, and they were like nicely dressed. You know, and fucking
and nice to people, like for the most part,
nice vehicles. It's not like these are fucking scumbag guys. Gangsters are kind of like somewhat somebody to look up to,
right? They're respected,
right? They're like, if you come up in the neighborhood and you come up, you know, looking at that, you want to be like that. But man, it's still got to be a scary situation because
every day could be your last.
Every day,
you don't know, exactly. Man. You go to start your car every day, you guarantee you're wincing for a quick second there,
yeah.
But I think there's a certain romanticism with this, like you've kind of pointed out, Joey. You know, you talk about the, you know, Billy the Kid and Wild Bill Hickok.
That's funny. I didn't even see the notes until just now. I said Billy the Kid, and you said it right there.
Yeah, I mean, but it's true though. I mean, those kind of people just seem to, and the nicknames too. Those are always big. Just like the serial killers,
yeah.
The ones with the catchy nicknames are always going to be like Zodiac and some of those. But, you know, Billy the Kid, Wild Bill, I mean, those are just cool. And Whitey Bulger is a cool nickname, even though he fucking hated it.
Yeah.
So I think people like to sometimes root for the bad guy. I mean, especially if they feel the bad guy's been wronged or is getting over on, like, the man, you know, the
Whitey
police.
Bulger was not wronged at all.
Or the government, maybe. You know, they're getting one over on the government with the FBI and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, you look at fictional characters like Tony Soprano would be a good one. Walter White, Saul Goodman, all those are bad guys who are stars of their respective shows because people
wanted to
sometimes
watch.
They can relate and pull for, especially Walter White.
Yeah,
you know,
Walter
he's dying
White,
of cancer. Dude. You can't help but root for the guy, you know, but then he becomes this fucking monster, you know.
I see this meme that said fucking Breaking Bad is totally different when you blame everything on Skyler.
That's funny. Yeah, so people associate with that and somehow are just fascinated with it. Like Joey mentioned, you know, the whole remorseless, you know, just killing and so brutal. So we're going to talk about that as we go, I'm sure. Now, James Joseph Bulger was born September 3rd, 1929 in Boston. His father, James Sr., was from Newfoundland in Canada and immigrated to the U.S. where he married Jean, who was an Irish immigrant. They had James Jr., of course, we know as Whitey, and he got that nickname because of some blonde hair, and he hated it, so... It kind of reminds me of Capone and how much he hated Scarface, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and they said it was like super light blonde. That's why.
Right.
White, like almost white.
Right, right. So his parents, though, wind up having to move to these projects, the McCormick Housing Project in South Boston, when Whitey's dad lost an arm, man.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. In a work accident, which, of course, forced the family into poverty. People from South Boston refer to themselves as Southies, and you hear that a lot, Joey, at Black Mass.
Yep.
That's kind of cool.
Going to Southie.
The Southies, man. He's a Southie, you know. Now, Chris, Whitey grows up in a tough working-class neighborhood, and he learned the streets at a young age. But when you're in that situation, dude, it's like kill or be killed, man.
You basically go with what's going on. You find – and you get a group of freaking – you get a group of fucking kids that you see you want to hang out with, and they're doing this shit you're going to follow with anyway. So out there robbing houses, fucking burning shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Doing whatever. Like,
doing bad stuff.
That's the way it is.
At a young age, you know.
Yeah, it's like 14, 12, 14.
It's fucked up to think, you know. Now, the Bulgers had two more sons, William and John, who both did very well in school. William, of course, would go on to become a politician,
Billy
a state
Bulger.
Senator.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
The which longest is fucked running up. Massachusetts state senator, I think, still.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And it was Whitey, though, that's getting into trouble. So the other two were fine, especially William did really well for himself. But there was always that question of, did he know what Whitey was doing?
And like kind of giving him a pass.
But. Yeah, and it's hard to say that he didn't. But, you know, John Connolly, I just watched an interview with him today. He swears that Whitey never talked to William about any of that kind of stuff. He just completely kept him out of it. So,
I mean, you got to.
Yeah. So he's learning the way of the streets. He likes people to call him Jim or Jimmy, and even Boots, because he was often wearing cowboy boots. But
putting that knife in there,
I was going to say, Chris, there was a reason why he's wearing cowboy boots.
Knife somewhere, man. It's easy to get to.
That's what they said. He had a switchblade down in his cowboy boots.
I feel like it. Unless he had his jeans tucked or his pants tucked into him, like you got to pull your leg up.
That's true.
Leg up and get to it. That's the work, man.
Yeah, unless he's just that quick, man. I don't know, but he is definitely a badass. But the nickname Whitey would stick above all the others. So Joey Whitey gains a reputation for being a tough kid, a very loyal Southie. He gets arrested at 14 for larceny and was involved in the Shamrocks gang. What do you know about his early criminal activities?
Well, that was his start of his criminal activity. It was basically when he was 14, he got caught. The start of his criminal record, I guess I'll say. Right. Now, at 10 years old, I heard he also ran away and joined the circus.
Oh, shit.
Which was like
that's fucked up.
Childhood fantasy, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
So I didn't look too much more into that, but I did read that in a couple spots, and I was like, okay, because that just kind of showed like his outgoing nature in early age.
What he wanted to do anyway.
But, like Pete said, he's arrested at 14 for stealing, and, you know, as a youth, he was arrested for larceny, forgery, assault and battery, armed robbery, and then he served 5 years in juvenile reformatory. So whenever he gets out, he goes into the Air Force. But, even as a kid, he was out there fucking doing dirt.
Yeah, that's...
like hardcore
dirt. That's crazy, man. But living in projects like that, I mean, it's tough for kids to not fall into that, you know?
That's why you have Candyman there to fucking take care of him.
A lot of temptation, you know? Candyman. So, yeah, he's arrested a bunch. He gets out of juvie and would enlist in the Air Force in 1948. And back then, they were actually giving people the option in court of go to the Army or go to jail.
Right.
And a lot of people went into the fucking service because of that. I guess so. And it was not uncommon then, but that's changed. I know when I was in the Army, that was not that way. I'm not sure when it changed, but... you know, especially during wartime, I mean, they're more apt to be a little more lenient, you know, come on.
Yeah, during wartime, though, motherfuckers probably more apt to be like, no, I'm going to prison, dude.
That's true, too. So anyway, he winds up getting into all sorts of trouble. You know, he winds up getting, going AWOL. He somehow, though, gets an honorable discharge out of the Air Force.
That's fucked
1952,
up.
So he did four. So that's about all I had read about his military career. It wasn't much other than he got into trouble.
Yeah.
He moves back to South Boston and resumes his gangster shit, ends up in prison again in 1952 at the federal penitentiary in Atlanta for armed robbery and hijacking trucks, Chris. Pretty crazy.
Just makes me think of Joe Pesci on Goodfellas.
Yeah, taking their driver's license. Yeah, totally, dude. While he was there, Whitey confided with inmate Kevin Weeks, who would wind up writing a book called Brutal about his time with Whitey. I wish I would have read it. I may wind up getting that one.
Part of an interview.
I did, too. I was just watching it this afternoon. A little last-minute stuff. But he talks to Kevin Weeks when they were in prison together about him being used as a human subject in the secret government program MK Ultra. And, Chris, we could totally do an episode on that. That's some fucked-up shit, man.
Man, they straight injected motherfuckers with LSD. I mean, right? I like to party shit.
But, I mean, they're doing it under the guise of they want to see if it'll enhance interrogations and stuff like that. And pretty fucked up. But we have heard about stuff like this. We did the Unabomber episode. Ted Kaczynski, Joey, he was at Harvard. He was getting the same kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that this one was a little more like the patients kind of knew what they were getting into or a little more explained about it.
Right.
Where them ones out in Harvard, they kind of fucking masked what they were really doing to them.
That's true. Yeah, that was sketchy. Really fucked with them.
But either way, like you said, like the MK Ultra, like that's a fucking episode there too.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, I've heard episodes on that others have done on that. It would be a good one for us to do. What do you think?
Of course.
But what do you think about effects on Whitey Bulger? Do you think taking all that LSD fucked with him?
Yeah, well, for sure, dude. I mean, they said he like kept having like nightmares and shit afterwards, like terribles, like waking up screaming and shit.
Right.
If you're getting that, like constantly getting fucking doses injected to you, it's gonna fuck with your brain. No matter what. I don't care what they say.
I agree, dude. For 18 months, him and 18 other inmates were subjected to experiments in exchange for reduced sentences. He would say the experiments, like you said, Chris, are nightmarish and took him to the depths of his sanity. Common sense is telling you, if this guy's already a psycho fucking killing machine, injecting him with LSD, probably not a good idea.
That's the best idea, bro.
It's like injecting a hungry tiger with LSD.
Fuck.
He would later say that he heard voices but was afraid to say anything to the people doing the test for fear he'd be committed to a mental institution for life. So that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, because you don't want that.
No, not at all. We wouldn't be talking about him if that's all that happened to him. In 1959, Bulger is transferred to Alcatraz. Later in 63, when Alcatraz was closed, he was sent to the federal prison in Leavenworth. Now, Chris, you said that he was involved in some gnarly shit in Alcatraz. What was that about?
Oh, I don't know what he was involved in.
Oh, nothing specific? Nothing specific. I thought there was like an incident or something.
No, nothing specific. No.
Okay, yeah, I hadn't heard of much either.
I did hear that supposedly fucking he was sent to Alcatraz because he was discovered making plans to escape when he was in Atlanta.
Ah,
so okay. They're like, all right, that fuck you. Fuck,
you're going.
Yeah.
Yep. And of course, when we did Alcatraz, we talked about all the different people that ended up there from being, you know, escaped inmates from other institutions, right. Where they're sending them to the one you can't escape from.
But you know what's, and on fucking CNN, Bulger, he fucking did like an interview or whatever after he got caught in 2011. And he said, if I could choose my epitaph on my tombstone, it would be, I'd rather be in Alcatraz. That's what he fucking said.
Wow. Like,
yeah. So I don't know. He must have had a good time in there. So I don't know what the fuck.
So he would have been there. Yeah. He would have been there in 1962 in the escape of the Anglin brothers and Frank Morris. So we covered that one in episode 144 just recently with Tech. So if you missed that one, definitely go back and give that a listen. Now, Joey Bulger would finally get paroled in 1965 and would not be arrested again for 46 years.
That's fucking forever.
That's right? For somebody like that. Time.
Like, doing everything he did.
That woman he had the kid with, I watched an interview with her today, and she said that he told her, I don't ever want to go to prison again.
Yeah.
And the lady interviewing her said, so does that mean he wasn't doing criminal activity? She said, no, I just mean, he said he's never going back to prison again. Like, right. Let's leave that alone. So, pretty fucked up. But
yeah, then he fucking, you know, he gets out of prison this time.
Right.
Goes back to Boston and fucking gets right back into the criminal activity, right. Like, even harder now.
But he learns how to not get caught.
Exactly.
He's paying people.
Yep.
He's got a fucking payroll going on.
You can't help but wonder, too, if you don't know about Whitey Bulger. Like we don't know about none of these dudes for real. But it makes me wonder that during his time while being incarcerated, if he made any connections that ended up getting him into where he became with the FBI, you know?
It's very possible, dude. But he grew up with Connolly, so, you know, there definitely was that tie with those two. But he gets out. He becomes a janitor and also worked construction for a while. And that's when he first met that woman he had the kid with. Because she said he was working construction, so I didn't have any reason to think he wasn't.
He was probably
But then at some point he stopped doing the construction and then was full-time, you know, gangster.
So. He was probably catcalling her.
It's very possible.
With his hard hat on, whistling and shit.
He gets into bookmaking and loan sharking under Don Colleen, who ran the Colleen gang with his brothers. They were very dominating in Boston. Some harsh shit, Joey. 20 years of gangland hits. Yeah. Nasty, you know, rub out in the middle of the fucking restaurant. fucking full auto, just blowing people away.
Fucking just wasted fucking Irish motherfuckers.
Yeah, and it's all this turf shit and dumb shit like that.
It's, I mean, it's...
To them, it's not dumb. I'm just saying, like, to the average person, it's like, what the fuck?
But you know? To be honest, like, back then, that's almost the equivalent of what you see in, like, the inner cities like Chicago and New York and shit
Of course, yeah.
That gang life is basically the same kind of fucking
thing. That's true, just a different form of it. This would be known as the Killeen Mullen War. A lot of fucking dead bodies over this gang rivalry shit. Whitey somehow manages to stay alive, and eventually a truce is achieved between the Killeens and the Mullins, and he's in like the nice spot because he's kind of right in the middle and he's cool with everybody. Nobody seems like, you know, they want him dead.
Like Kuklinski was with all the fucking
gangs. Right. And he learns a lot from working under Don Killeen. Now, 1972 is when Whitey establishes himself as part of the Winter Hill Gang with Howie Winter, another, you know, Boston gang icon. This was a gang mixed with Irish and Italians in South Boston, and Whitey begins to gain power by getting rid of any opposition and getting Howie Winter to sanction the hits, which is usually how that works. And so Whitey is known as a very intelligent guy, but definitely he's got a thing for violence, not afraid to use it, completely without remorse.
And he was a good fighter. They said, like, just straight up,
walk
up on a motherfucker and beat him.
Oh, yeah. He was a tough motherfucker, man. And he was moving up the chain very quickly. Now, Chris, 1979, Howie Winters is arrested with some of his associates for fixing horse races. But again, Whitey just fucking sneaks out and doesn't get arrested.
But he becomes the boss now.
Right. Now that power vacuum. Yeah. Now he's in the perfect spot again. And now he's running the Winter Hill Gang with Stevie Flemmy.
With the vengeance.
The Rifleman. Some harsh shit. The two of them now running the Winter Hill Gang. Dude. So and pretty impressive.
That's a dangerous guy to have running a gang too. Fucking
well, like, yeah,
not giving a fuck. I'm taking care of shit and I'm taking care of shit my way.
Right Now the gang headquarters is moved to the west side of Boston, and this would be when Whitey was hanging out at that bar, the Triple O's. I saw that in every documentary about him, the Triple O's. But that bar would be the sort of central meeting place for Whitey and a lot of his buddies. Whitey is involved in burning an elementary school to the ground to intimidate a judge who is pushing for desegregation. So what the fuck, yeah, man?
Like, wanted all the schools still segregated?
Yeah. Right, whatever. Kind of fucked up. And then he throws a Molotov cocktail in the birthplace of JFK to intimidate Ted Kennedy, who was pushing for desegregation of schools in Boston. So what the fuck? Definitely not doing this shit like with any kind of panache. No, it's just like, fuck you.
It's like, I'm gonna fucking burn your fucking brother's house down just so you fucking don't fuck with me, because guess what, you're next, motherfucker.
Right. Well, there was that one family, we're gonna get to it later, with the bar that he winds up talking to him about. And I saw an interview with the mother, the wife of the guy, and talks about the little baby up on his lap was like 13 months old, was teething, and it like made her cringe to see hit the baby on his lap, and he had a gun out and the baby was teething on the gun and Whitey was just laughing at it.
Holy shit.
That's fucked up. Yeah. And he turned to her and said, it would be a shame if you didn't get to see her grow up, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Dude, yeah.
Pretty brutal. As early as 1971, the FBI would claim that Whitey Bulger was approached by John Connolly to be an informant in an effort to bust the Italian mob. What the fuck with that? Specifically, the Patriarca family. And they were, you know, running the Italian mob, and the FBI had their sights on them.
It's and weird, they just wanted to get rid of the Italian mob. There's all these other fucking...
Well, the Winter Hill Gang had some Italians in it, but run by Irish.
Run by Irish. But there's La Cosa Nostra is what they were looking
exactly,
at.
Exactly. So a few years later, when Whitey started working with Flemmy, who is, of course, Italian, he didn't know that Flemmy was an informant. So they were both informants, Flemmy since 65. And you see a lot of that when you research stories like this of people flipping sides and people, informants, you don't know that they are, and they're like your closest friend. Joey, it gets almost confusing with that kind of stuff going on. Yeah, what do you make of it?
That can't be fucking easy for them at all. And it seems like anybody that was fucking getting bigger, organized crime, you don't get bigger without rubbing some kind of political shoulders at some point.
Right.
And you either do that in a completely negative way to get yourself ousted, or you find a way to fucking get in on it with them.
Right.
And, you know, Boston at this time, fuck, man, fucking dirty shit all over the place.
Right.
And both of them fucking working together. Not to mention, this is... There's a thought process going on between Connolly and his guys, and then fucking Bulger and his guys, and they're kind of on the same wavelength about some things.
Right.
About how they want to keep the neighborhood or things like that.
Right.
So Connolly's looking at it like, okay, you can help us keep shit, you know, in line the way that we like how we've always had it around here.
Right.
At the same time, I might turn my eye from a little bit of bullshit that you might do.
Right.
Whitey sees that as his excuse right there. Like, boom, this is where I fucking come in and fucking just take over, because now I have them on my back.
Yeah,
I can do. They already said I can do some shit I want.
Right.
Any dirtier shit he's doing, he just fucking denies and says, fucking call me out on it then.
Of course. Right.
But man, it was a crazy.
He basically got a free pass.
He did have it. Well, he was paying for it, but they weren't going to fuck with him.
But he's still. Okay, yeah, he gets to be a fucking snitch. He gets to be a snitch against the fucking people he don't want there anyway.
Right. He's in war. He's at war with those
motherfuckers. He's like, holy fuck, I've got so much fucking...
Get rid of my competition.
This is like a huge fucking weapon for him.
Right.
Yeah.
To just clean up fucking part of that shit.
And hide under their fucking wing, you know. In his heyday with the Winter Hill Gang, Whitey was extorting money from drug dealers around Boston, claiming that he had contracts to kill them unless they paid him, he would do it. So these people were afraid of him. He's walking around with the rifleman, man. That's
like, look, you know, see this?
Right.
This is for me to come kill you. You give me money, I'll let you live.
Exactly.
You give me enough money, I'll go kill the person that had you come to,
there you go. Come to kill right. you. And he's making massive amounts of money from this scam. He's also involved in arms trafficking for the IRA, which, of course, at the time was at war with the British. And due to the large Irish population in Boston, there was a movement to help the IRA. So he was like a hero within his community for doing it. And there was a story I heard on one of the docs that I watched about that local guy with the liquor store.
Yeah.
Him and his wife put all their life savings into opening this liquor store. And he gets a call or shows up at the door.
He's like,
Whitey Bulger, the rifleman, and another guy. And they told him that, we're partners with you at this bar, or we're going to kill you. Because there's a contract out on you from the other liquor store owners that don't want you in business over there.
So if you want to stay alive, we're partners now.
Dude, right.
Like, did that to so many people.
Well, yeah, and the wife was at the store, and he's, like, freaking out because they're at the house. So they call her, and they get her to come down there back to the house, and that's when she sees the baby on the lap with her teething on the gun and stuff. I mean, pretty fucked up. So what else are you going to do but fucking cut him in on the deal, you know? I think they gave him $67,000. There was no negotiation. Whitey deemed it, see, here's 67 grand. We run out of the back of the business running our shit, and you do your thing up front and just just leave us alone. We'll leave you alone under the guise of this business. Yeah. So pretty fucked up stuff. I was just amazed that, you know, had the balls to do some shit like that. Now, Chris, you see that story about Bulger getting the winning lottery ticket? What the fuck with that?
Bucks?
How the hell did he do that?
This dude's out here robbing motherfuckers and then gets a winning lottery ticket for $14 million. But it came out of the store he owned, so he pretty much went and found the winner. The person
that's what I'm wondering, if he hunted him down and
like,
took the ticket.
Nah, that's mine.
That's pretty crazy, though. Joey, in 1994, the DEA, Boston Police, and Massachusetts State Police started investigating illegal gambling, and that's when Whitey starts to get into a shit.
Yeah, I mean, Whitey Bulger's basically had a fucking a cape around him for a while, right, with some of the shit he's doing. Even couldn't even fucking murder, like, that's no bullshit. He got away with some fucking murders during that time that probably never would have. But once the gambling shit came up, I mean, he was just it was a public interest to get involved in the gambling operations because fucking the public didn't want it. Whitey Bulger was too big a name in what they were fucking aimed at. So he was going to fucking fall into that fucking, the investigation.
Right.
And this time he couldn't fucking pay or talk his way out of any of that because there was too many fucking different affiliates of the law enforcement coming in.
Right. Yeah. More than the FBI was involved right. in this one. So now John Connolly would brag about the fact that he brought Bulger in that movie. Connolly's wife was definitely not into the fact he's hanging out with Bulger and these other gangsters, and she winds up leaving him over it. Connolly is also getting a lot of heat from the agents above him to produce more information from Bulger. They talk about that a lot in that movie, Black Rain. But Black he was, Mass. I'm sorry, yeah, thank you, Black Mass. He was tipping off Bulger about the FBI investigations into his activities, the racketeering stuff. So this is where some of the gray areas are, and based on the way it went in the movie, Black Mass, Connolly was definitely going outside the bounds by taking money from Whitey to turn a blind eye and to tip him off. So that's what winds up being his downfall. Steve Flemmy, of course, would joke around about how he and Whitey didn't give the FBI shit and thought it was funny the way they let him get away with murder. So pretty fucked up. John Morris is the head of the FBI office, and he's also involved in the scam, taking money and accepting plane tickets for his girlfriend to visit him while he's training in Georgia.
Nothing so, wrong with that, dude.
No. Hey, that's all good. 1988, the Boston Globe would blow things open by reporting on the involvement of the local FBI office and that Bulger was an informant. So there's quite a bit of stuff I saw on YouTube with him, Connolly doing local Boston interviews in response to stuff like this before he was convicted.
Right.
And he's trying his best to make himself sound good.
I'm cool.
They call him out on it in a couple of them. It's pretty interesting. Now, Chris, as you know, people are finding Bulger as an informant could definitely turn his ass up dead.
You're in the fucking mob. That's going to end you up dead, dude.
Right.
That's the thing about the mafia, dude. You keep your mouth shut all the time. Don't talk about it. And even if you do keep your mouth shut, people are going to think you talked and you're going to get dead.
Right.
So, yeah, if they 100% find out that you're talking, not good.
No. And I mean, even if somebody with a rep like Whitey Bulger still could get wiped out pretty easy.
Yeah. Whacked.
By whacked. Some of these. Whacked. Hey. Joey, 95, Bulger and Flemmy are indicted on racketeering charges. Now, for our listeners, what exactly is racketeering?
I'm going to let Whitey tell you guys about what racketeering
please
is.
Please do, it's, Whitey.
Okay, children, we're going to let Whitey tell you all about racketeering. Hey, guys. Racketeering is the act of acquiring a business through illegal activity, operating a business with illegally derived income, or using a business to commit illegal acts. The U.S. government introduced the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act in October 1970 to contain racketeering. Now, what are some examples of racketeering?
Please tell us.
It can take many forms. Murder.
Murder.
Money laundering. Financial and economic crimes, kidnapping, sexual exploitation of children, bribery, robbery, cyber extortion, and drug crimes are examples of racketeering. Now, one last thing, why is it called racketeering? Because of the clandestine nature of the black market, most proceeds made from criminal rackets go untaxed. Term racketeering was coined by the Employees Association of Chicago in June 1927 in a statement about the influence of organized crime in the Teamsters Union.
Thank you, Whitey.
Wow. Thanks, Whitey. That was very informative, man. You've been boning up on your research skills in the joint.
I was.
Now, there's other Italian mobsters indicted along with Bulger and Flemmy. Through their lawyers, though, they're able to confirm that both Bulger and Flemmy are informants during the discovery phase. So now the mob knows. So now they're in the shit. Since Connolly tipped off Bulger about the racketeering charges, though, he escapes, leaves Boston. And I saw a lot of stuff about all the different places he was at. There was some sighting of him in London in 2002. I mean, very elusive.
Hell yeah.
16 years, yeah, Chris. Dude, 16 man.
Years.
He was in the top 10 of the FBI's most wanted for 12 years. And I saw they had a $2 million reward for him, only second to Osama bin Laden.
He was number one after bin Laden got.
Yeah.
After they got bin Laden.
Yeah.
He turned to number one.
That's fucked up.
How freaky that's going to be.
Right.
When you're all, number two, but now everybody's looking
in your 80s, too. Like, yeah. God damn, man, this guy's fucking
they
old.
They don't think
dude.
I'm dead yet.
Right.
They get the U.S. Marshals fucking help him find
Oh, me. Yeah. Like, now, a woman from Iceland, this is interesting. The FBI actually was using a picture of Catherine Grieg, the girlfriend, in hopes that maybe somebody would notice her more than Whitey, thinking that she might have been the one going out to the store and stuff like that, more so than with him. And so a woman from Iceland who actually lived in the apartment nearby where they lived was the one that called the FBI and got them caught. The FBI, I don't know what the ruse was to get him out of the apartment, but they did.
It's because they had a storage unit or whatever. So they had the
They
had the superintendent or whatever call them and say there was a robbery, want him to come downstairs.
Okay.
So Whitey came downstairs and like they instantly was like, put your fucking hands up.
Right, in like a parking garage or something
And fucking that was that.
Yeah, without incident.
And then there was like, no, he's got dementia. So the cops like were like, hold on, did I just arrest some crazy dude that thinks he's fucking Whitey Bulger, dude?
Oh, that's funny.
Like, no, this is
it's
me.
It's him. Yeah.
No, this is me. I'll fucking own up to it, whatever.
Wow.
I guess they told him to get on his knees and put a hand behind his back. He's basically like, fuck you.
Right.
I ain't doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there's more than $800,000 in cash at the apartment, 30 firearms, fake IDs. Of course, the girlfriend, she winds up getting caught. She goes in without incident for, you know, harboring a fugitive, basically. She's like 20 years younger than him and had been with them for quite a while.
Dude, and he said, fucking, I'll own up to everything I've done. Just let her go.
Yeah, he wanted to let them to let her go. She wound up getting 8 years.
She got like 8 years for harboring, like you said, harboring a fugitive.
Yeah. But yeah, I did see that he was trying to get her out of it. He was brought back to Boston and charged with 40 crimes, including murder, extortion, racketeering, money laundering, and narcotic sales. And he pled not guilty. Now, Chris, he would have his lawyers go on this crazy campaign to prove he was not an informant. Instead of trying to prove he wasn't guilty, they just seemed like they were driven to just deal with
the murder.
Is he or is he not an informant?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Like the fine wording of it, and was he truly an informant?
Mobsters just don't want to be called out on that. Like right. Like I said, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
I'm not a rat.
Right, we've.
Oh, you're a rat. No, I'm not a rat. I might have talked.
Family's all rats.
All family's all rats. I might have talked, but I'm not a rat. Like, they don't like that shit.
Right. I think one of the books that one of the mobsters wrote about this was called Pack of Rats or something like that. And the guy that wrote the book was on the interview, and he had a really strong Boston accent the way he said that.
Nice.
Pack of rats or whatever.
Pack of rats.
So it was just funny. But yeah, he's more driven to prove that. And we've seen that with some of these other ones, Chris, where they don't have any issue with you talking about him killing people and hacking them up.
Oh, but yeah.
But God forbid they've got a funny voice or they're
right.
Or, they say you're an informant. You know, like these are serious things to them. It's their rep. It's who they are.
That's who they are.
Hey, that's their right to believe that.
You know who I feel like was not a rat? Was the Iceman.
The Iceman.
I don't think he was much of a rat.
I don't think he was
a rat. But there's a lot of people that claim that his stories were grossly exaggerated and that author that wrote the book, he's written several books. He's gone now. But, a lot of people think that his books are Philip Carlo, that he went too far. Yeah.
He wrote the one about
karate. Right, the other one we did.
Karate, yeah.
Yeah, and Tommy said that it was bullshit. So,
why wouldn't he say that?
Of course.
I'm not talking shit, Tommy.
Right, right, right. Please. Now, November 2013, Whitey Bulger is found guilty and sentenced to two life sentences. He also had to forfeit millions. He was first sent to prison in Florida before being transferred to Oklahoma, then Virginia. Apparently, he's busted in prison in Florida for masturbation in front of a guard and then also threatening a female staff member. So he's not a good guy. He's in his 80s and he's being a pain in the ass.
Just the normal old man in a nursing home.
Right. Now, despite the problems he's causing, his health is finally starting to fail. But Joey, October 29th, 2018, the 89 Bulger is found dead in prison.
Dude, like 24 hours after he got to that prison.
Oh, is that how quick it was?
It was 12 hours.
Was it? Okay, 12 hours.
Or, oh, that's what I heard. I mean, but yeah, within 24.
Within 24 hours of him getting sent to this prison.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he gets there, and like we said, he wasn't there long. It wasn't a fucking day. And they fucking grab him up, these guys, and they fucking try to push him out. He's in a fucking wheelchair, and they try to push him out of view of the CCTV because the fucking they're in prison, so obviously things are.
Yeah.
And they end up pummeling him with fucking padlock and a sock. So there's our medal we were talking about earlier. Nice.
And a shank.
So now, they attacked him, and they really tried not to, you know, be seen on the cameras and stuff, but they did get seen. And there is CCTV. You can see him getting hit and shit. But, yeah, they fucking pummeled him. Like, they fucking wanted to ruin him so that he was unrecognizable.
And they did.
Yeah, and it was a straight hit and retaliation. And fucking he was hit so fucking bad, and he was bleeding so profusely that his eyes came out.
Yeah, they got
They didn't know if they got gouged out or if they got knocked out from getting hit so fucking hard. Right,
and his fucking tongue was fucking like almost fucking cut off.
Yeah.
Wow.
They had a couple suspects. I know one guy was Freddie Gayes.
Yes.
Who was a mafia hitman who also, I can't remember who he killed, somebody from like one of them other fucking big families out there. They said that he was one of them. No one ever really got charged with that murder.
Dude, but he's been in solitary since then. Right. Like, fucking still sitting there and never been charged with it.
Not charged, but in solitary. Yeah, that's fucked up.
Wow.
And they say, you know, you have to wonder, within 12 hours, the way the hit went down, was there inside prison officials knew what was going on? Like, we'll transfer
definitely
right here.
A mob hit. Style the way they did that.
Now,
the mob hitman being the one of the two.
I did fuck this up because I was going to originally, whenever he asked me how he died, be like, well, he was standing there and all of a sudden he was shot in the back of his head and it was over. But that's not how it happened because he fucking
brutal.
Your last moment. Yeah, you're fucking getting punishment back for a lot of bullshit that you did. You would have been happier to have got fucking blasted in the head outside somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Than what he went through.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking torture.
Yeah.
Right. It went on for a while. Definitely, you know, such a good gangster story with the end like that. They either end up in prison or dead. And in case of Whitey Bulger, both, man.
So yeah.
Pretty fucked up. But he ruined a lot of lives. And that's the thing, you know, when you talk about this shit. I mean, he got hit for a reason because a lot of people were pretty pissed off at him. But anything to add to this one?
Would you
guys
consider him a snitch? I mean, he was just working back and forth. Is he a snitch or is he just working?
I'm not aware of any particular person he like busted out, but maybe he did. I don't really know. I do know that, you know, they were all dirty, so
I mean, he was turning in information on the rival gang.
True, yeah, right. So he was.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, which way do you weigh it? That the feds were using him to get information, or he was using the feds to take care of his fucking opposition?
Right.
So
it's definitely different than a classic, like you're saying, Chris, like it's a snitch, you know? I definitely wouldn't look at him that way, but he was just a shrewd businessman in that line of work.
Yeah.
Employing the government to give you cover as you do your shit. So
pretty much.
Definitely an interesting one, but I did my research with a few good documentaries out there. I mentioned a few interviews I watched today. Also that movie, Black Mass, really good. Johnny Depp plays Whitey Bulger. As far as I know, it was pretty close to the facts of the case. There's a lot of stuff on him. There's several books I mentioned as we went. Check them out. Read up on this stuff. It's interesting. There's a lot of stuff out there, so you can definitely learn a lot if you want to give it a listen. Next week,
we're going down under. Dude,
it's
going to
be so badass. Like, I can't wait. Another Australian case. This is a good one, Chris. He's been on the list for quite a while. Ivan Milat, the backpacker murder.
I'm getting excited because it's been a little bit since we did a really brutal one. We kind of did a few different kind of topics, which is always awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But we're fucking doing backpack killer. Oh, yeah. Fucking,
some straight serial killer shit. Yeah, man.
Fucking the movie, what is it?
I can't think offhand.
Oh, yeah. I just watched it, too.
Wolf Creek.
Yeah, that's good.
That was based off of him.
Right. It's very loosely based. Right. But somewhat, Yeah. Stuff that they tie in.
Yeah, but horror buffs, they might know from that. But,
oh, yeah.
But we're doing the real case, though.
Right. If you're not familiar with Ivan Milat, the gruesome story involving a trail of dead bodies found near the Australian in Sydney, the Belanglo Forest, definitely a good one.
Belanglo.
He's been on the list for a long time.
It's like a mouth harp.
And Jenny bought us some Vegemite on Amazon. We just got it yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I asked Sean Ferrucci of In Malice's Wake, the Australian, how do we eat this? Because we're going to eat it on the air. We're going to read it. We're going to do the story, and then we're going to eat some Vegemite. And Sean is claiming lots of butter on the toast and sparing with the Vegemite.
I'm pretty, whenever, because like I said, Rick Ring, he sent it to me. And it was pretty much exactly what he said. He was like, hot. He was like, hot, because the Vegemite's like really fucking coarse.
Oh, okay.
So to get it to melt and spread, it's like basically if you have a fucking hard stick of butter, you know how you try to spread it and it's like fucking turns to chunks and shit?
Right.
That's how the Vegemite was, but if you get that shit fucking hot and you get the butter on there, there you go.
Okay, so we're going to try Vegemite next week, Chris.
Bringing the toaster out to the fucking studio.
Well, we'll toast it and then she's going to do it up and then cut it into pieces and we'll eat it while we're doing the show. So Vegemite, we're going to try it. So all you Australians are going to get a laugh, I bet, as we all gag eating the Vegemite.
But that's going to be a good episode.
It's going to be great. Ivan Milat. All right. We've also lined up another interview with Dr. Harold Schechter. Yes. Very cool. True crime author and a shitload of books on serial killers. Yes. I think I've got every one of them.
Still amazing we get people like him to talk to
us. I know, more than once. But Harold's a good dude. His latest Maniac is the one I read about, the horrible Bath school disaster, which is on our list for August. And so we're going to talk to Harold about that and some other topics that we got coming up. Chris, Leopold, and Loeb.
Yeah.
Some good ones that I'm anxious to hear what he's got to say. Maybe some Columbine discussions with Harold.
So, our 150th.
Yeah, we got that coming up. So it should be really good. We're doing that one Sunday, so that'll be fun. And Joey, you got any good page a day? We love page a day.
Yeah, I got a couple of them. And one of them is actually a tie-in because Pete showed me the new book he got in today. It's about the Robert Durst case.
Yeah.
And it just so happens one of the page a days mentions him. It's not about him.
That's funny.
All right, so I'm going to get into these. So page a day, thanks again. Nobody will ever hear it from that company, but I'm always going to say because I fucking get these straight from that. But so page a day is talking about the murderer and whenever murderers got caught and – the way they got caught was like a minor crime, like a stupid thing.
Like the fucking taillight out.
Like Rifkin.
Yeah.
Right. So who they're talking about is, like Timothy McVeigh, he got caught for driving without a license plate after he fucking, bombed the building. He's out fucking driving around fucking, and he's got no plate on the vehicle and he's got a concealed weapon on him.
Yeah,
and then they fucking link him. So that was McVeigh. And then you have Ted Bundy, and then he's driving a stolen car. Of course, he's down in Florida, and after he killed, the Leech girl, he's still out there just fucking wild and drinking and
doing his thing.
He's in a fucking stolen vehicle and he gets fucking pulled over, and that's how he got caught.
Right.
He attempted to flee the scene, of course, and then he's detained. So then you got Peter Sutcliffe. and he was caught for driving with a stolen license plate. So
Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah, the Yorkshire Ripper. So he's out in this car and he's got stolen plates on it. They pull him over for that. Whenever they pull him in, they're like, hey, you match these sketches right here. The Yorkshire Ripper.
Right.
So he got caught that way. You got fucking David Berkowitz, and he got caught
parking
in front of a fire hydrant. Exactly. Because somebody saw that he pulled the ticket off, ripped it up, and they remembered that.
Right.
And they're like, hey, at this time, this car.
Right.
And that's how they got fucking Berkowitz. And then the last one, and like this would be. Talk about Durst. Robert Durst, he was caught for stealing a chicken salad sandwich. Yeah.
And, that sounds like Shane, bro.
He's a millionaire, multi-millionaire.
He had been a fugitive for 2 weeks when he was caught for stealing that sandwich, and in his car they found $40,000.
Right.
And that's how he got
caught.
What
a dumbass.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. And he said he didn't even know why he stole it. It just was like an impulse.
It's like
thing.
Winona Ryder stealing the candy bar.
Yeah.
It's like what just got to do some fucking shit.
What an idiot.
All right. So that was that one. The other one I got from Paige today, and this is kind of a localish one for us, so I thought that was cool. And it's about the Watsika Wonder.
Oh, yeah. We did that one.
Did you guys do
that?
We
did do Watsika Wonder.
Okay. Then I won't talk too much about it, but I'll still run through
it. It's a good story, though.
Yeah. It's a good.
I'll just do it anyway then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a good story.
It's been a while.
And off topic, did you do Tony Costa?
No.
No.
Okay, you know who that is?
Sounds familiar, but offhand
I
don't.
I think I asked Chris one time and he couldn't remember either. I was like, fuck, can't remember. Anyway, that was another one from a page today and I saw it and I was but I knew already knew him. But anyway, so the Watsika Wonder, and if you like what I'm telling you, go back and find the episode. It had to have been the early one because I don't even remember. I think we were still upstairs.
I think so too. And I have a book on it.
Yeah.
There's only one book. I have it.
The book. The Watsika.
It's the journal from the doctor that treated her.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. And there's a lot of YouTube videos
about
people doing ghost hunts there. My daughter, Katie, was just talking about it's open for Airbnb if you want to stay there.
Wow.
But it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But the owners for a period of time didn't want anybody on the property. But now apparently either they or new owners are cool with, to some extent, exploiting the house for what happened. So go ahead.
All right. So let me tell the story of the Watsika Wonder. If you like it, go listen to our other episode and go see if you go stay at the B&B.
Watsika, Illinois.
So you're right. So for our listeners that don't know, Watsika is a town outside of Chicago, a little bit south of it. So kind of closest to us within a couple hours.
Yeah, between us and Chicago.
Yeah. In July 1877, 13-year-old Lawrence Venom. How do you say it?
Venom.
That's what I thought, but I was like, man, it sounds too brutal.
I know, it sounds weird.
So Lawrence Venom, she goes into a strange catatonic sleep where she claims to speak with these spirits and stuff, goes into the spirit world. They occurred multiple times daily and would sometimes last up to 8 hours, which is a long-ass time.
Long fucking time.
And whenever she would come out of it, she wouldn't fucking remember any of it or recall any of it, but she would be speaking in different voices and things of that nature. So the doctors diagnose her as mentally ill, and they want to send her to the insane asylum in Peoria, which, of course, we've talked about that, too.
Yes, Bartonville.
In January 1978, another gentleman, Azar Roth, who was also from Watsika, but, of course, they didn't know each other, supposedly. I mean, there's skeptics to it, too. But,
yeah.
But they, you know, for our sake, they didn't know each other. He visited the Venom family, and he claimed that his daughter, Mary, had experienced the same exact thing that had been going on with Lawrence, and that he was convinced that her spirit still existed and that he was communicating through Lawrence, the girl.
Right.
So Mary Roth, you know, she dies July 5th of 1865 while hospitalized in the asylum, which as we know from that fucking story, you never know what kind of situation really was the cause of death there.
Right.
She was committed after she began slashing her arms with a straight razor, which was the worst of the things that she did. You know, this started with the trances and things like that and escalated.
Right.
And then she started slashing herself with the razors. She had become convinced, and she got obsessed with blood and was convinced that she had to get her blood out. And she was doing it with pins and leeches and, you know, finally to the straight razor. And they're like, okay, you got to go to this fucking hospital. And I didn't even, you guys would have to remind me. I didn't see much about the death and they didn't talk about it on here, but they said it didn't happen very long after she had been committed though. So,
yeah, I don't remember offhand how she died, but it was just this crazy thing where there was the girl that died in the town.
Yeah.
And she claimed like she knew the people like from her past.
Yeah.
And it's like, how would she know who her aunts were and stuff? The families didn't associate with each other.
Right.
And the girl that died was able to play piano really well, and Lawrencey was not. So she was able to play the piano, and not only play the piano, but was playing songs that the other girl wrote on her own. Was playing the songs like she knew them, which is pretty fucked up.
Which was her originals. So Asa Roth, the father, he only intervened whenever they were talking about sending her to the asylum. Like, he let them exhaust all the medical things they could do, and then he came over and said something.
Yeah.
And then he brought the spiritualist. And I thought this was funny because I think of Pete. His name's Dr. E. Winchester Stevens, and using the letter.
Yes.
So Dr. E. Winchester. Yes. So they go over there, and they mesmerize Lawrencey. And within moments, she's talking in other voices and things like that. A woman, Katrina Hogan, and then a boy named Willie Canning, who had supposedly committed suicide. They said they talked to her as him for like an hour, and then all of a sudden she throws her arms up, falls backwards, and says, I'm going to let you talk to a calmer spirit because I'm in heaven. And she said the new spirit was Mary Roth,
right?
Which is fucking crazy because there's no way she could have known that,
right?
She said the spirit, you know, as Mary Roth, the trance with her as Mary continues into the next day.
Right.
And now Mary Roth, Lawrencey, she's not comfortable in the house. She's not like employed or nothing, but that's not her home.
Right.
And
she wants to go back to her home. House. Yes.
Right. So she's like, no, I want to go to the Roth house. So Asa Roth lets his wife know what's going on. She comes over to the Venom house with their daughter, Minerva Alter. While they're walking up the sidewalk, Lawrencey sees them. She's like, oh, there's Ma and Nervy. And Minerva said nobody had called her that since Mary had died. There's no way that she could have known.
Right.
So they allow her on February 11th to go to the Roth house. And she's there. And, you know, I mean, they drive past her old house first off on the way there. And she's like, wait, why aren't we going to our house? And they're like, oh, well, we moved a couple years ago. So she knew where the house was that they had lived. She lived with the Roths for several months as Mary.
It's so crazy.
And she seemed to like completely forgotten her other life. But she did let them know that she only had until May.
Right.
And then, so, you know, she knew all this shit about the Roth's house, about their possessions, everything they, you know, had.
Right.
Way too much to be fucking made up.
Coincidence.
Yeah. And then so early May comes along and she tells them, you know, it's time for her to leave. And she's like touching them and hugging them overly and all that. And then all of a sudden, you know, she goes back on May 21st back to the Venom house. And everything's just gone. No signs of any kind of illness, nothing. She is Lawrencey Venom once again. She's happy and healthy. She remained in touch with the Roth family because she felt some kind of closeness with them, even though she didn't remember anything about it. And then she ends up moving to Kansas with a farmer who she marries, has 11 children, and had a normal life. But
that's fucking
the
insane.
The Watsika Wonder.
Yeah, the Watsika Wonder is a really cool story. That's a cool page a day, man.
Yeah.
Different than the usual page today. So
So the Murder Mel Mayhem.
Yeah, we did it at Halloween week or the month of October. I seem to remember we did the Watsika Wonder first Halloween. So check that out. Yeah, that's going back a ways. Yeah. So very cool. All right. Well, I think CK's getting ready to come out and do his thing. So Joey, what the fuck do we need to do?
We need to get our metal on.
Known the world over as the master of metal, the crusher of posers, and Murder Metal Mayhem's knower of all things metal, hailing from Wild Man Street in Danbury, Connecticut, standing at 6 feet of brutal, punishing madness, weighing in at 220 pounds of poser pulverization, the one, the only, toughest bastard on the planet, Chris C.K. Comics! Not a rose, the great,
metal motherfucker! There he is. Great metal motherfucker. What's up, CK?
What's up?
Same
shit. What's going on, gentlemen?
In the studio, just different night.
We've been doing a new thing now, CK. We're eating Pop-Tarts on our break here, and so we're coming into the episode chewing. And don't mean any disrespect, but it's a new tradition here that we...
No, I got to get on the ball and get some Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, we got blueberry and strawberry tonight.
So, CK so going to get some s'mores or something fancy.
There you go. Right?
No, fancy shit. I'm traditional strawberry.
Okay. All right, very good.
And putting out a disclaimer here, I had nothing to do with the first segment of Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, you don't want anybody paying you a visit.
I don't want anybody, you know.
Right.
I know he's dead, but I don't want any of his associates maybe, you know, paying a visit.
Right. You had nothing to do with it.
Again, CK had nothing to do with it.
All right.
I'm CK. I do the metal segment and non. Okay. Right. So if anybody has any questions.
Hey, it was a CK guy. I'm going to put a fucking bomb in his car.
Yeah, we even got Whitey to do the promo for the episode this week. You'll have to hear it. All right, CK. Cool. Well, we got you on to talk about metal, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. But you got a band that you're going to do. I've never even heard of them before, dude. I had to check it out when you told me who it was. So
yeah, I'm starting to get a little obscure on some of these bands.
Obscure is new stuff, dude. Like
trying to... you know, what the hell?
Who's ringing?
What is that
is
ringing?
Is that Pete calling you?
Yeah. It's coming off my other iPad.
Make it stop, please.
CK's is like, fuck, I'm not fucking popular. He's popular motherfucker.
What I guess.
Fuck.
So what band are you doing tonight, CK?
I'm doing a band called Red Fang. They're from Portland, Oregon. And they were formed in 2005. So they've been around good 16 years, give or take.
Okay.
With the same band members, as far as I know. They've been with had the same band members since the beginning. Four-piece, like I said, out of Portland. The first album came out in 2009, which was a self-titled album, which was pretty much their first two EPs. On one album, and it was released on a very obscure label called Sergeant House Records, which, you know, I have, of course.
Of course you do.
Of course.
You know, just make that clear. And like I said, it was the first two EPs on one CD. It didn't do that great because obviously you're on a smaller label. It did okay, like, regionally for them, but as far as nationwide, it didn't really hit. But it did catch the ear of Relapse Records, iconic metal label, which everybody pretty much knows about.
Yes.
And they released their, I would say their real debut for them, which is Murder of the Mountains.
And sounds like a fun vacation.
Yeah, that was released in 2011, and they started to get, you know, a little following and was able to get on some really good tours. I mean, they toured with Crowbar, they toured with Helmet in 2011.
What year did we see Helmet? That was after 2011.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that was 2011 when they toured with them. They also played on the Rockstar Energy Drink Mayhem Festival with Megadeth. And in September, they went on a major tour with Dillinger Escape Plan and Mastodon. So they got a little, they kind of got known from that album. And in 2013, they released Whales and Leeches, which is one of my favorite albums. It actually hit number 66 on the Billboard charts. So it actually, you know, it actually did very well as far as sales, obviously.
That's cool.
You know, and again, this is, you know, the time, it's 2013. People are starting to stream shit. They're not really buying physical copies. And in 2016, three years later, they released a follow-up to that, which is called Only Ghosts, which is another killer one, and that also entered the Billboard charts at 143.
Wow.
And I could see why it didn't go higher, because now, you know, people have the streaming platforms.
Right.
You know, by this time you have Spotify, you have what used to be Google Play is now YouTube Music.
Right.
So you had all those, and obviously, you know, if people are streaming, it kills the record sales. So I could see why it didn't chart higher. And just this year, they released a great album called Arrows just a couple weeks ago. Kind of a little bit different than the previous albums. But definitely their sound is definitely like a sludgy sound, kind of like a... It doesn't quite go to stoner metal, but it is a slow, sludgy sound, kind of along the lines of maybe early Mastodon.
Okay.
Definitely maybe Crowbar.
Right.
Type of sludge.
Yeah, I thought of Crowbar when I heard the song. I play a clip from the song Arrow, and I thought it reminded me of some Crowbar riffs. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they definitely have a definite, you know, sound. They owe some of their sound to Crowbar, I think. But no, all their albums are pretty much available online. The first one is very, very hard to find, but it is available, and obviously you can stream it. But again, I try to push the
physicals and shit.
The physicals, you know, buy a shirt and all that shit.
Well, CK, you're going to be proud of me. Today I got a package from our friends in Byzantine. I ordered a shirt. I ordered two CDs, not just one, two CDs.
Oh, really? Which ones?
I got the Cicada Tree and then the one before that. I can't remember.
Oh, so the last two albums.
Yeah, fucking killer. Killer. And a big sticker. OJ sent me a big sticker for the table.
I love those guys. I'm
trying to find where to put it. I may put it on the wall. It's huge.
I definitely got to do a feature on them. I might do that next week.
Yeah, they would be great. They just start their tour tomorrow in Pittsburgh. By the time this episode comes out, it'll be tomorrow. So Thursday, the 29th, Byzantine's in Pittsburgh. I can't remember the name of the club, but I'm sure you can find it. So... Yeah, I mean, you want to support these bands, and that's cool. And yeah, I didn't know anything about Red Fang, so, you know, it's just always cool to hear from you.
Check them out. You know, you may like them.
Right. I know it's not
in your guys' wheelbox as far as, you know, metal, but, you know, maybe other people will hear and dig them. But,
yeah. No, that's cool.
But I definitely know your Lost Classic.
Yeah, the Lost Classic, that's a good one, CK.
I do know that.
Oh, God. That's
Razor.
Razor from Canada, Executioner song.
Yeah.
I love it because it's very primitive sounding.
Yes.
If you listen to it. Obviously
that's part
of its
appeal, though.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, they've gotten better over the years,
right?
But that being their first album, I just something about the primitive sound that some of these bands have.
Well, yeah, like Venom. I mean, Venom wouldn't be Venom if they sounded spit polished in a studio. You know what I mean? It's got to sound like somebody's got an amp.
Oh yeah,
that fell down a flight of stairs and the microphone fell with it. You know?
No, and they just started playing their instruments. And,
yeah, it's just raw. You know, yeah,
but I definitely love they'll follow them since the beginning, and they've obviously progressed and they've gotten better over the years. But definitely check it out. They just re-release a lot of their stuff on CD, so it is all available. But check out Razor, Executioner song, the first album.
Fuck yeah! All right, well, I hear that music. 6-6 fucking 6. We're going to talk about some of the shit we've been listening to. So let's check it out. Oh, yeah, no, no. Hell yeah. 6-6 fucking 6.
Yeah.
Onslaught. Another band I'd love to see come over here and tour. Yeah, amazing band. Great album last year, and I know they're itching to get out there like everybody else. All right, well, we're going to talk about what we've been listening to here lately, and CK, I'm going to start with you tonight. What have you been checking out, dude?
I've been checking out a couple bands. Been listening to Metal Church, and I'll get a little, and then a couple minutes we'll get to the reason why I've been jamming some Metal Church. The new Flotsam, still killer. Still digging that. A band called Caius. From the deserts of California. If you haven't checked out Caius, check them out.
How do you spell that?
K-Y-U-S-S.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a
very,
fan.
Very, I would say that's definitely stoner metal.
Okay.
But I've dug them for years now. Cool. A band called OSI.
Oh yeah, Jim Mathaeos. Which,
Jim Mathaeos from Fates Warning is in it.
Kevin Moore.
Also Kevin Moore from
Dream Theater.
Former Dream Theater keyboardist.
Right.
And going old school, death metal. Some Morbid Angel.
Nice.
Oh, and not to forget him, but I've been listening to some classic punk by the Descendants as well.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Joey, what about you, dude?
I've been listening to some Mindless Self-Indulgence. I was listening to Anal Blast, Vaginal Vampire, because...
Joey.
Yeah, Joey Jordan.
I love those guys.
Yeah, Joey Jordan, he fucking wrote some of the... He was in the band at the beginning of it, but for any recordings or nothing.
I didn't know that.
Interesting.
And I've been listening to... I got Metallica Ride the Lightning. I was jamming that for a bit. And
I can't go wrong with that one.
Nope. And in the car right now, I got brutal death metal band Cotard Syndrome.
Fuck yeah, man.
Yep.
Chris, what about you, dude?
For obvious reasons, yesterday I played some Slipknot and some fucking Murder Dolls and shit. Why not? Fuck it, because I love it.
It's
been a while. I was playing some Arch Spire the other day. Like Arch Spire. What else? Winds of Plague. Did a little core. Did a little core thing for a minute. Winds of Plague.
Winds of Plague. They're fucking brutal.
Dude, they're fucking badass, man.
I love those guys.
God damn, they're so fucking heavy, dude.
Fuck yeah, dude. Well, I've been told you guys have been jamming that Byzantine, and I got a DVD of theirs.
Nice.
That's an old one, CK. I can't remember. I would know it if I heard the name of it. But it's really cool. It's got a lot of live stuff and interviews with them, and it's just really cool. It's from like 2002. So
I didn't know they had one.
Yeah, it's after their
Schizogen too.
It's after their second album. It's right before they did the third one. But the one I couldn't remember, I remembered I got the Cicada Tree. The other name is the one I like the best of all so far. Is To Release Is To Resolve. Came out in 2015. Fucking nasty, man. Wow. Really dig those guys. And also been listening to my audiobook, which I'm going to talk about later. But I had a lot of driving to do this weekend, and I just am wrapping it up now. I am about halfway through our bonus 666 Express track on there. It's fucking hilarious listening to it a while. You know, our voices are all on there, and the music, and all the crazy sound effects. And I'm anxious to see...
That was so much fun.
I'm anxious to see Mick jump up and fucking attack some zombies at the end. So no, I'm not there yet, but it's starting to get crazy. So I've been listening to that, and it's kind of weird listening to yourself read your own stories. But I really wanted to listen to how did it turn out, you know, things I can improve next time. They set the price. I have nothing to say about that. I think it was for members of Audible, it's 17 something, and for non-members, it's like 24. But they base it on how long it is, so it's 10 and a half hours of talking. So
yeah, it's just figured
that's how it works. It has nothing to do with anything else, according to them. So.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, so you look at some of them, like The Stand and some of those monster books, those are like $40, $50.
Yeah, because
it's a lot of audio. I mean, you're listening to over 100 hours of audio. That's a lot of fucking hours. Think about 100 albums.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you think about that, 100 albums, that's how much it is, you know, so.
Guess you got to pay for that.
Yeah, you're paying for that voice actor and the people that produce those and everything. It's a lot of work, as I know, doing it, so. Now, CK, there's been some deaths here just very recently, and then one that dropped today. So go ahead and let us know who that is.
Couple days ago, Mike Howe of Metal Church passed away. As far as I know, I just looked it up. There's no, the family's not given a reason of his death. So,
right.
You know, I don't know. He was only 55 or 56, so he wasn't that old. No, maybe a heart attack. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah, you always wonder, and you, sometimes you never know. Like Riley Gale, have they ever formally said what it was?
I thought.
No.
I saw. Really? They didn't?
What did you?
I thought I saw somewhere that was an overdose. I thought. But maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not that I'm not a huge fan of Slipknot, but former drummer Joey Jordison.
Yeah.
He also passed away at age 46.
Yeah, only, that's really crazy.
He's only 3 years older than me.
Yeah, any cause known so far?
I don't know, but I didn't realize he had a neurological disease that took his leg.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, so I was unaware of that, and you know, if he's playing with a prosthetic leg, more power to him when he was alive. Because you know, I just
oh, he's ridiculous, man.
So I don't know if that had any cause to his death or not. They're not giving out a cause yet.
They said is that he went peacefully in his sleep.
Yeah, in his sleep.
Oh wow.
So
it's a lot better than Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, a little bit. And then new one, CK.
And the third one, not metal, but very influential. From a band that's very influential in all genres and a lot of genres. Dusty Hill from ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Yeah, bass player.
Passed away this morning. I believe was also in his sleep.
That's what I read.
Yeah, he was like 72, I think, right?
Yeah. Definitely an influential band, and a number of bands have covered ZZ Top songs, especially Motorhead.
Yeah.
They covered one or two. I know they covered Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers on their first album. Definitely a killer cover song.
Oh, sure, but, sure.
You know, unfortunately... It's been a bad week at this point.
Yeah, but Joey, some good news you had to
Tom
report.
Browning.
Tom Hunting.
I was looking over here. Yeah, Tom Hunting of Exodus, the drummer, he came back fully cancer-free now. So that was some good news. Yeah, that was good news in their camp for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
They're doing so many good fundraisers for him, and that's really cool. We mentioned that before, metalheads helping metalheads. That's just awesome.
Because these guys, I don't think these guys have... insurance.
A lot of them don't.
It's not
right.
It's not the best.
No, it's not. Unless you got lucky and you got a wife with good insurance.
Right, right.
They're not living some rock star fantasy.
No, not at all.
I'm lucky. Even though I'm on disability, my company still pays for. I still get my insurance because I'm on disability. So
right, right. Well, yeah, that's good news in the midst of some bad stuff. And we've plugged our 666 Club, and that's a good thing, Chris, because that gives them some cool behind-the-scenes shit.
Fucking right.
Dude. Episodes early, 10% off merch, karaoke when we do them.
If you listen to the Whitey Bulger episode tonight and you like that, we did an Al
Capone one.
You're going to
want to hear some Capone.
Yeah.
And that's a bonus that you get with the 666 Club. So... link is in the episode description. You go to patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem, $3 a month, and you can become a member of the club and get all that VIP brutal access to Murder Metal Mayhem.
You ain't got to be patched up or nothing to join our club.
That's right.
if I wasn't a host and got this shit free, I would pay for it.
Yeah, I would too, man. I would too. All right, Joey, you went up to Chicago this week and had a good time doing some Goremongers. So.
I did, yeah. I played a show up at fucking Reggie's in downtown Chicago, which is an awesome fucking club.
Good turnout?
Yeah, it was a great turnout. The place is pretty packed. I played second, and I mean, there was a good amount of people there for
That's
it.
That's a great venue, is right.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So
and,
cool.
And the sound was like...
Oh, yeah, it rips.
Out of all the Goremonger sets that I played, like, that was top of the line, probably one of the best ones that I played.
Yeah, I saw Fate's Warning there. It was amazing. Hell yeah. Yeah, they were really good there.
So, yeah, but I played the Monkey Man Open, which was this dude with an accordion and a monkey mask and shit. He was classic.
Oh, nice.
But he played, like, a bunch of, like, fucking video game songs shit on his accordion. It was weird shit. But, yeah, then I played Sacrificial Massacre played. It was from up by there. And then Dysenter played. That was, like, my biggest draw for playing that because I fucking loved Dysenter since forever ago.
Right.
And they played some new songs that were fucking badass. They said they just recorded, like, 16 new ones.
Yeah, they were a heavycore band. Yeah, those guys are badass.
And then...
What band was that?
Dysenter. D-I-S-I-N-T-E-R.
I think I've heard of
them. Oh, yeah. They're old. I think they started in, like, 1990.
Yeah,
so they have a little more of a death metal feel, but they're heavy as fuck.
Yeah.
But so then they played, and then the headliner was Bitru, B-I-T-R-U, from Colombia, down in South America. And it was unfortunate because the whole band couldn't make it over with their visas and stuff.
Oh, shit.
But he made it over, and he's obviously one of the guitarists. It was a three-piece, but he had the one man, but he had his drum set up. And he obviously had some friends. I think he did like a seven-day tour here in the U.S. So he had it where he was able to play. So that was cool.
That's cool.
He was a super awesome guy, and everybody was like fucking helping out each other. But,
that's awesome.
The place was packed. That's everybody was really responsive to the music, and fucking everybody had a good time. No drama and shit. So
fantastic.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Oh, I forgot to mention. I just saw a little while ago. That Ray Alder and Mark Zonder. Mark Zonder, formerly of Fate's Warning, just formed a new band. It's called A to Z.
Oh, cool! I did see you mention something about that on Facebook, but didn't know what the band name was. That's cool.
I shared it on our site. So
awesome.
You know, they have an album coming out on Metal Blade. So
very cool, very cool.
I meant to mention that.
Now, Chris, you and Joey are going to join me here in the studio. We're going to do a Voice of Dread together. That should be fun. We're going to be talking about Maximum Overdrive.
You don't like Maximum Overdrive.
The Stephen King short story inspired movie. It's corny as fuck, but that's what makes it cool.
God, I love that movie.
It's almost the epitome of all 80s.
It is. Yeah, it really is. And we're going to have some fun with it. AC/DC on the soundtrack. AC/DC's
the whole soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah, so very, very cool. And we've talked about doing this for a while, and I took about 6 weeks off of Voice of Dread because I had a lot going on with the audiobook and stuff, and now that all that's done, I'm going to start it off again, and we're going to kick it off with a Murder Metal Mayhem Gone Maximum Overdrive in a Voice of Dread episode.
Fucking right, dude.
So
that's going to be weird.
A big mashup. That'll be fun. Also, we've talked about these shirts we've got, the Jeff Gaither design on the front, the zombies. Halloween's coming, Chris. What a better time to buy one of those shirts.
Everybody likes to open a Halloween gift.
Yeah, and you got a fucking zombie image of each of us on the front. And then
it's
Joey,
awesome.
A little blood spatter on the back, Murder Metal Mayhem. So link to that in the episode description, but pick one of those up. And we've done plenty of metal tonight. So CK, tell us what the fuck we got to do.
We need to get our mayhem on.
You got someone who pisses you the fuck off? Have you tried to reason with them, but their dumb ass just won't fucking listen? Well, contact Bulge Anger Management, Division of Benoit Anger Management, and let us help you.
Ed Bulge's take care of this old prick at work. He beat this motherfucker to death in the parking lot one night after work. shit, he was in the hospital for a month and never came back. With extensive brain damage, I don't think he'll say a damn thing. Literally. Yeah.
We take care of business the old school way. Don't worry about that jerk that lives next door with a stupid ass dog barking outside all fucking day. Forget about it. Or the boss that refuses to give you a weekend off when you just need that shit. Just call us at 888-WHITEY-KILLS and mention pain and suffering when you check out for 10% off. Forget about it.
I even use Bulges when some asshole cut me off in traffic. With their sweet app, I was able to get someone to do a drive-by and gun their asses down with AK-47s. I could smell the carbon from my car, and it added that professional touch.
Let Bulger Anger Management save the stress. Download our app, and pain and suffering is just a couple clicks away. Fuck yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's such
man,
a good one.
The Benoit Anger Management Company, Chris, really diversifying Bulger Anger Management. Oh, damn, Jesus Joey Christ. Doing the Bulger. I honestly, I forgot when that played.
Yeah.
I was like, I heard it for the first time because I forgot who did which voice.
I'm pretty impressed that the voice that I used
you
for
did.
The intro was kind of close to that
I felt
one.
Bad I didn't recognize it. Yeah. After I heard that, I'm like, duh, yeah. You know, that's Joey's Whitey Bulger. So that was great. And then me and CK playing some callers calling fun. In. And Joey that was just great. Good so
it's always fun to do those calls.
Yeah, for sure. And last, before that was Red Fang and the song Arrow. And CK was good to learn about something we didn't know anything yep. about.
Hell yeah.
Now, of course, we are in mayhem now, and that means we sometimes tell some tales. And CK,
you say you got
you
one.
Said you got one. So
yeah. I have one from work.
It's not another shit in the aisle story.
No.
That was
no.
great. Yeah, that was good.
No, this one goes back to probably I've been with the company for a year. I was probably 17 or 18.
Right.
This is going back maybe 33 years ago because I just hit my 34th anniversary on July, beginning of July.
Damn.
Believe it or not. So I work at a grocery store. I manage now. Hopefully nobody hears this because if half these people heard the shit that we used to do, I would never be where I am now.
Right.
Or. If I went back to work. But we decided that we were going to go in the cooler because we got everything done early. I think there was four of us. It was at night. We decided we were going to have a wrestling match in the cooler.
Well, that sounds fucking
good
fun.
Idea.
Yeah.
Now, you got to remember the cooler... Condensation, you got, you know, it's moist on the floor.
Right.
No, everything's slick. Yeah. You
I
got
see.
A little y'all slippery. Take your shirts off too?
No. a little slippery. Things are going good until one of my friends decided to pick another kid up who was smaller than he was. My friend,
just say small.
We'll just say his name was Tom.
Okay.
Was a little on the bulky side. I don't want to say fat.
That's all right. But Tom's a big dude, and this guy's a little guy.
Yeah, big boned.
Big boned, yes.
So he decided he was going to pick the kid up and pretend to body slam him.
Oh.
Well. He picked him up, lost his footing, and there was a pallet on the floor, and dropped the kid on his hip. His hip hit the corner of the pallet.
Oh, that's not good, dude.
Oh, no. Snap.
Probably shattered that shit.
And, oh, my God, he was, as soon as he hit that, he was crying. He was in pain. And we're like, what the fuck we doing? And the kid who got hurt goes, I'll just, and he's in pain. He goes, I'll just say I tripped and fell. You guys just go get the manager and get. I got
your back, guys. I got your back.
Oh damn.
So you know, he got picked up. They had to call the ambulance. And he actually broke his hip. He was out for like a while.
Oh, I can only imagine.
But
damn,
that's my mayhem story.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Shit we used to do when
stupid shit you do at work.
Fuck
yeah, you know. Besides doing whippets in the
right, of course. That's what I thought you were gonna say. You did some whippets in the cooler.
No, we did those too, and me and my buddy.
Yeah, those are fucked up.
Dude, I'll call him Bill. We did him until he passed out.
Oh man. Dude, Chris, you got a quick story. Yeah.
This is just like last week.
Okay.
So this is how my week started. Sunday night, I lost my fucking phone. I couldn't find my phone anywhere. So I went to work all day Monday with no phone, everything. So I couldn't listen to no music. I'm fucking pissed off. And that was the last day we had to wear a mask. I'm fucking yelling at my bosses. I'm like, I'm sick of this shit, dude.
Oh,
fucking,
damn.
Not yelling at him, but I'm just like straight up telling him, like, I'm done. So the next day, I ain't saying it was because of me, but corporate comes back with like, all right, no more mask. So I get off work that day, pissed off, fucking can't find my phone. I find my phone. Cool. The rest of the week goes.
Where was your phone?
Oh yeah, but my phone was in my couch in the basement, and I don't even remember being in the basement. Oh, by wow. The way, like I don't remember being down there at all. But that's where it was.
Maybe so, somebody hit it on you.
No, I'm pretty sure I was drunk and went down to the basement.
Probably. Okay. Probably.
So, rest of the week goes pretty all right. Whatever. Until Thursday, me and Michael, we're drinking. Whatever. Me and Michael get into a fucking fight with each other, just start beating the shit out of each other, right?
Oh my God.
In the middle of all this shit, my phone gets fucking broke. So, yeah, so me and Michael fight the shit out of each other. And then, yeah, my phone broke, like shattered the screen. I'm like, fuck. So now I start the week without my phone. Now I got to end the week without my phone, whatever. So, like, the next morning I wake up, I got no phone. Fucking Michael's coming over, fucking, because he lives right next door. I look at him, I'm like, what the fuck did we fight about? He's like, I don't fucking know. I'm like, I don't fucking know either. It's fucking,
wow.
But dude, my fucking jaw hurts. I got this big ass bruise on my leg. What the shit just happened?
And your phone's fucked up.
Yeah, my phone's fucking jacked, dude.
Jesus Christ.
So like, I have to go to work.
Life at the Nation.
Dude, I had to go to work. I'm at work all day, like I said, with no phone. Fucking, my dad was nice enough to take my phone to fucking go get the screen replaced, whatever.
Right.
So I'm on my way to pick up my daughter when my phone gets finished. So fucking Michael and Sam go to Normal Gadgets to fucking pick up my fucking phone. Michael has access to my phone. So next thing I know, there's all these Facebook fucking posts fucking talking about like,
shit.
I'm a dirty butt pirate and fucking all this shit. I'm like, you're a fucking dick. And at the same time, so like I'm in the car, right? And I got my laptop with me and my mom's driving me and shit. So I got my laptop hooked to a fucking hotspot on her phone so I can like at least message people through Messenger and shit.
Right.
And I'm seeing all this shit pop up while it's happening.
Oh,
I'm like,
man.
God damn it, you motherfucker, dude. Yeah, that's fucking stupid, dude.
Wow.
But I got my phone fixed and I got a brand new case for it. So
that's good. Very, very good.
If I lost my phone, I don't know what I would do.
I know. It sucks when you don't have your phone or it's not working right.
I wish like, I'd lose half, my phone half, a lot.
Right?
I wish that my phone would disappear sometimes.
My life is on my phone, like all my fucking shit that I have for my medical and all that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, my Creation of Chaos 3 book came out, as you guys know, and I thank everybody that's bought a copy, and I link to that in the episode description if you haven't got one. If you get one from me, you get an 11x17 poster and a bookmark signed, and you also will get it from me. You can go to creationofchaos.com, or I'll link to that in the episode description. If you get it on Amazon, that's cool, but you won't get the poster and the bookmark, and I think it's a little bit more on Amazon. But now, Chris, after all these years, you've told me you ought to do your books in audio, and I'm like, no. Well, finally relented, and it's on Audible now. Creation of Chaos 3 is on Audible, iTunes, and Amazon, so go check it out. It's very exciting. And I was contacted by the Night Terrors podcast, which I mentioned last week. They have purchased the rights to use the story Cross to Bear, and that's going to be on an upcoming podcast within the next couple months. And they also want to do another story, but they haven't committed to one yet. So Very, very cool. And it's nice to, you know, get the word out there and maybe get some new readers from and listeners, because I always talk about both whenever I do anything. I'm always talking about Murder Metal Mayhem in the middle of it, too. So, all right. So we got a good.
And I know you put a lot of work into that Audible.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Doing it twice was enough.
So definitely check it out, because you know, Pete did put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, and Tucker always, kills it too. Brad Tucker does the two stories on there. He's amazing. All right, tonight we got a good killer cage match. This is where we take 70 killers that we came up with, 70 objects for them to fight with, and we let our listeners pick some random numbers so we know who's going to fight, what they're fighting with, and the variable in the cage. Chris, we want to say thank you.
Yes, we do. We want to say thank you to Elizabeth Washington, Tommy Davis, and Samantha Cram. Thank you much.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you. Because of you three, we've now got this very strange matchup, Joey. What the fuck is going on
here? The Drifter Killer, Henry Lee Lucas. And let's clarify, it's just Henry Lee, not without us.
That's right. The Confessions Killer.
Yep. So Henry Lee Lucas, he's going to be fighting with child killer Andrea Yates.
Hell yeah. We did Andrea Yates, Chris.
I wish back we in did.
About how she drowned all her fucking kids in the bathtub, dude. That's just fucked up.
I wish we did.
And CK, these two yahoos are going to be fighting with what?
Oh, God. They're going to be fighting with a 2x4 with nails in it and a brass butt plug covered in feces.
That's rough.
And the variable is two millennial dudes. I love this. With man buns fighting over a tub of plant-based butter.
Oh, boy. So.
What the fuck?
Now, everybody always bitches about going after Joey. So we're going to start with you. We're going to start with you, Chris. What do you think? Man. You go ahead. What do you think?
Basically, Andrea Yates is going to watch these two greased up millennials and be like, God damn, that's fucking hot. Just be like, I ain't paying attention to nothing but that.
Wow.
Okay. And so, like, in the meantime, fucking Lucas, he's just looking at this butt plug like, did I just take that out of Otis's ass? I don't know where that came from. And grab that fucking 2x4 with the nails. And he's just going to walk up and smash all three of them, dude.
Oh, damn. And the millennials?
Yep, I'm going with Lucas. Okay. I'm going with Lucas.
All right. Chris, CK, what do you think, dude?
Obviously, Henry Lee Lucas has the upper hand.
He's a little Andrea guy, Yates, though.
She's mentally challenged anyway, so she's just going to be just staring into space, you know, wondering what the hell's going on and why is she there. And Henry Lucas is just going to take that fucking baseball bat and just fucking pummel her until she's done. I have to agree with Chris. I think he's going to take out the two millennials.
Okay.
Because they're just going to piss him off and he's just going to get annoyed and he has to dispose of them.
Okay. Joey?
What I think is going to happen is Henry Lee, he's going to go one way. He's going to go racing for that butt plug covered with fucking shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Andrea Yates, she's going to run the other way. She sees those millennials, and they've got a tub of plant-based butter. She's going to drown them in the tub of plant-based butter. She's like, I need to drown these motherfuckers.
Did somebody say tub?
Yeah. So she's going over. She's going over and drowning the millennials in the tub. Henry Lee, he's glad to have a little bit of time while she's doing that because he grabs that butt plug and shoves it up his own ass and fucks himself with it for a little while. Then he fucking grabs that fucking 2x4, runs over after Andrea Yates has killed the dudes in the tub and fucking just smacks the fuck out of her with that motherfucker, knocks her on the ground, sticks the fucking the spiked end in her face and starts stomping on it and fucking kills her. He then takes the fucking remainder of the fucking post with the spikes in it and sticks that in his ass as well.
Wow.
So he wins.
That's why you can't go after fucking Joey.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how old Henry Lee Lucas is not winning this fight.
No,
I think whoever gets a hold of that 2x4, but I think Andrea, like CK was saying, she's kind of out of it. You know, as Italians would say, stunad. She doesn't know what the fuck's going on, and Henry Lee's going to fuck her up with that 2x4 and possibly use the brass butt plug on her.
Yeah.
He might. And he's got some of that plant-based butter left, so if the butt plug needs some help, you know, he's got the tub of butter there.
Tasty.
So, all right. Well, I think we've done our fair share of mayhem tonight, so let's hit that fucking outro. That was Decapitated, the song Earth Scar. Those guys recently got out of the studio. I can't fucking wait. I love them. It's amazing how much different they are with the new members when after the accident happened. Yeah. But I still like both bands. I like them both. They are very different, though, of course, with different singer and different drummer. So, but, all right. But still, badass.
Still kick ass.
Very badass. Tonight, the bumper music, Iron Maiden, Red Fang, and, of course, Decapitated. Chris, CK's intro music is by which band?
Crysex!
Fuck yeah. CK, Murder Metal Mayhem intro is by what band?
By none other than the fucking badass band, the legendary No Motherfucking 12.
Oh, for Christ's sake. And Joey, the 666 fucking 6 music.
Hey, it's my fucking Onslaught.
Hey, thanks, Whitey. So thank you to everybody out there listening. We keep seeing the numbers rolling in. We were about 2,900 this last week, so thank you. We appreciate everybody that checks out the show, and we got some commenters here. Chris, why don't you take that first one there, dude?
Nigel Simpkins says, I'm in the UK, and I have a group of friends that really love your podcast. We often get together and listen. Have a few pints and get a lot of laughs. Thanks for kicking so much ass. Metal.
Fuck yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks, Nigel.
Well, love getting those comments from overseas.
Yeah, okay, that's really cool.
That's amazing. It's awesome.
Joey, we got a lady we want to say thank you to.
Yeah, Carla Johnson, 88. She commented, I really liked that episode you did on the Clutter Murders. I didn't know much about that one. I've been listening for a year or so. I'm in El Paso, Texas. You guys fucking crush it every week. Awesome. Thank you very much. And yeah, El Paso, man, that's where my buddy was that showed me that link to our podcast.
Oh, nice. Pop it up. Nice.
So yeah, we got some people down there checking it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks. CK, what about this one? This is a good name here.
Carol Baskin, sucks 777. That's awesome. Commented, I was happy to hear CK do Mastodon last week. When I heard they were going to tour with Maiden, I was stoked. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. Oh, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks,
Carol. I'm glad you definitely dug the Mastodon.
Yeah, that's cool.
Feature.
That's very cool. Now, Marta Yancey commented, I'm a listener from Sydney. Hell yeah. And I love that Snowtown Murders episode. I have a cousin who lives in Snowtown, and you're right. They hate that those murders made them famous, so I can't blame them.
I can't imagine, dude.
Yeah, Jesus. I'm anxious for you to cover Ivan Milat. I read this and I was like, hell yeah, she's going to like this one. Because we're doing Ivan Milat, Chris, next week.
Next week.
Little backpacker murders. We are actually going to eat Vegemite, Marta, on the show. The three of us with some toast and butter. Jenny ordered some, CK.
Yeah, you guys could
We have it. We got it yesterday, so it'll be here.
I will not order Vegemite.
That's all right. That's all right. We are going to do it, and we're going to do it live on the show, probably at the end of the episode, because I thought if it's really gross and we're like throwing up and stuff, it'd be kind of fucked up to talk for an hour and a half about something after just throwing up.
That's mayhem. All I remember is Sean.
That's mayhem, bro.
So,
it's Sean from the Malice's Wake saying it's an acquired taste.
I know, and Sean said a lot of butter, so we'll have plenty of fucking butter, okay? So, Marta, thank you. That's cool. We're doing Ivan Milat less next week, and so glad that your comment came at a good time. Don't forget to check out MurderMetalMayhem.com if you want to listen to the podcasts. If you don't listen on an app, but you can really listen to us anywhere. Facebook, of course, Twitter, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. and support the show. Go to the 666 Club, patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. And all this stuff I link to in the episode description. Also, creationofchaos.com if you want to pick up the new book. And also the Audible, iTunes, and Amazon version of it, an audiobook with me and Brad Tucker reading 13 creepy-ass fucking stories. So it's pretty cool. And it has the bonus version, Chris, of our 666 Express.
Right, fucking does.
Which is cool with the music and all of us doing the voices, and it's going to be great. We're going to do that again. I got another one we're going to do. So check out the new podcast, voiceofdread.com. We're going to be doing that one on Maximum Overdrive, and Chris. And that'll be coming out very soon. So hopefully we get some Murder Metal Mayhem listeners going over there to check that out. And we can't let him go without hearing a karaoke song. This is one from the past, but it perfectly fits a Boston-themed feature this week. So crank it the fuck up. And until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And your fist running the streets of Southie.
Yeah, what they said.
Forget about it.
Where it began, I can't begin to know when, but then I know it's growing strong. Was it the spring, and spring became the summer? Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Sweet Caroline, good times never seem so good. The night, and it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two, and when I hurt rubs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Warm, touching warm, reaching out, touching me, fucking touching you. Sweet Caroline, good times never seem so good.
Man.